Welcome to the Social Impact Solutions podcast, where we help mission-driven leaders measure and market their social impact so they can raise more money and do more good. I'm Lauren.
And I'm John Mark. Together, we bring you expert insights, practical strategies, and real-world stories to help you create more meaningful and measurable change. This podcast is designed for purpose-driven leaders. So let's dive in, explore what's possible, and take your mission to the next level. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Social Impact Solutions podcast. Today, I am joined by Carly Berna, the fundraiser in residence at Virtuous CRM. Carly is an extremely experienced, deeply knowledgeable fundraiser who has led teams, built programs, and advised organizations on what actually drives growth. Today's conversation is extremely practical, and we are actually tailoring this conversation around Virtuous's new benchmark report. This is a report that looks at the key metrics that drive meaningful growth for organizations, and you're going to be able to look at how some of the top nonprofits that use Virtuous, how they perform related to some of these metrics in the report. I'm very excited to get to share this conversation that I got to have with Carly with you. Let's go ahead and dive on in. Carly, thank you so much for being here today.
Great to be here.
Okay, well, we've got a lot to talk about. We've got a lot of fun things to discuss regarding you, the great work that you do at Virtuous. You came out with a wonderful benchmark report, which I can't wait to dive into and break down with a lot of folks that are listening. But first, let's just do a quick intro. Who are you? Why do you work at Virtuous? What do you guys do? And why is that so important?
Yeah, my name is Carly Berna. I am the fundraiser in residence at Virtuous, which means that I previously was a fundraiser for over 10 years at a nonprofit in Phoenix where I was the chief marketing and development officer. Now I get to take that same fundraising knowledge and use it at Virtuous. If you haven't heard of Virtuous, it's the only responsive fundraising platform. So it's a CRM that really uses a specific methodology to make sure that you can connect with your donors personally and grow giving. So just like a CRM that you may have, but this is like really specific to making sure that you're building personal connections with your donors.
That's fantastic. I completely agree. We are a big supporter of Virtuous, partner of Virtuous, and strongly recommend it to folks that are interested in growth. I always say it with that, like, hey, if you want to grow your organization, you're going to need a database to support that.
Yeah.
You need to consider Virtuous. If you're just looking for a CRM, there's a lot of them out there. But if you want to grow, strongly consider what you're doing with Virtuous. I love that. Yeah. I love the title. Fundraising residence. I think that's a great title for you.
Yeah, I just, you know, we use a lot of titles like you probably have in your career that don't mean anything. And I'm really trying to say like, hey, I worked in the nonprofit space. Like I've been there literally doing the things that you're doing. So like I get to use that knowledge when we're talking about the product, when we're talking to customers, which is amazing.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. And you've been with Virtuous for a year and a half, something
just,
like that?
Yeah, just over a year. Yeah,
awesome.
I was actually, I didn't mention, I was a Virtuous customer for 7 years. So I kind of feel like I've been with Virtuous for a long time, but only as like an employee for a year.
Yeah, that's interesting though, because that's early days for Virtuous. I mean, Virtuous is only like 10 years old, right?
Yeah, so I was a customer when Virtuous was like 3. And it was a very different company than it is now.
I just think what your team, what Gabe and the rest of the crew over there has done has just been fantastic. It's a wonderful platform, solving a massive, massive problem, huge need. And it's one of those things that we always feel so good, like comfortable referring other people to. Like we get the chance to work with a lot of different platforms, a lot of different organizations, and just being able to say, hey, this is a safe place. This is a good place. This is a growth place. And so I love that for y'all. That's really awesome. So I just know this a little bit about your background here. You left business school. You joined, you know, a wonderful organization. You were there for 10 years. You understand the ins and outs of fundraising, but I would really love to lean into sort of the academic business school type rigor with what you've applied to this benchmarking report. So do you want to talk about the benchmarking report? We can go through some of the metrics and just break that down.
Yeah, sure. So I got my MBA. And then when I went into the nonprofit space and I was learning fundraising, I was like, oh, I can really apply like a lot of these same business principles to nonprofits. I was actually just talking to someone the other day that was like, nonprofit is a tax status only. Should still operate your nonprofit like a business. It's not about making money for your shareholders, but it's about making money for your mission. So really, we're trying to do that same thing here. It's like, you can grow your mission, you can be as efficient as you can be, but you still have to pay attention to the right metrics so that they're really like the guiding force for you to know what decisions you should make.
I could not agree with that more. Just the phrase not-for-profit or nonprofit, I genuinely dislike. It's one of those things where it leads people down this softer trail where if like, oh, we don't need to be as rigorous. We don't need to take this as seriously. And when we realized, hey, that just means not-for-profit distributions, right?
Yeah,
shareholders aren't going to be making a bunch of money on this. And it allows organizations to actually solve problems that businesses aren't really capable of solving, right? Businesses have different constraints than nonprofits do. Nonprofits have different constraints than businesses do. And so being able to leverage not being taxed, being able to leverage not doing profit distributions allows for greater social impact. But you said something very important, applying a lot of the same lessons learned in business school to the organization. So this is the second Virtuous Benchmark report. You've authored both of them, which is exciting. Let's talk about what some of those metrics are. What's the highlights of the benchmark report? And then let's dive into the specifics of it.
Yeah, I'll mention just as a background for the benchmark report, we looked at over 570 Virtuous customers. They all had been on the platform for at least 3 years. So we had like some consistent time to make sure, you know, they were all kind of in the same place. What you're going to find in the report is 7 metrics. We have some bonus metrics as well. But if you're thinking about downloading it, we include like the calculations, why each metric matters, how to improve those metrics. So it's not just like a report of data. There's like a lot of great insights in there. If you're like, I have no idea how to improve my average gift or whatever. There's a few things that I'm really excited about from the benchmark report. I'll just kind of touch on those. Actually, I'll pause because I'm sure you have commentary. But one of the ones I was most excited about is that we look at average gift in a couple of ways. We look just at average gift. We look at median gift and we look at online average gift. And we take out 10K gifts from them all so that we're kind of not including outliers. But average gift was basically flat over the previous year. But online average gift went up $5 or about 4%, which is up $22 since 2020. So I think that says a lot about fundraising moving online, the tactics that you can apply online to increase someone's gift, whether that's like an upsell or like a dynamic ask array or recurring giving, all of those things. But to see that like such a big jump in online average gift while average gift stays the same, which is all the other channels, was really surprising to me, but also really encouraging.
It's absolutely encouraging. When you think about, you said $22 since 2020?
Yeah.
That's a huge jump. That's a very, very interesting jump. But just thinking about, obviously we're competing against inflation, we're competing against lots of other things.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, we could have 50 different podcasts on each of those strategies that you just mentioned, like just the donation upsell that you can do literally just in the form field, like in the actual checkout. That's really exciting to see that much of a jump in only 5 years. This is 2024 data. So like we're talking about, you know, looking at 4 years actually.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah. So we saw both average gift and median gift stay the same. If you're not super familiar with those two metrics, I love median gift. It's kind of like the gift right in the middle of all your gifts. So it's just the gift that your donors are constantly giving. And it's a great metric to think about if you want to anchor like an ask array on your website. Like make sure that your ask array does not start lower than your median gift. Like if your median gift is $40, don't start your ask array at $10. So it's just a great metric to be like, where does mine fall according to the industry? And how am I using that across my different arrays? But besides average gifts, at Virtuous, I feel like the number one metric we always talk about is donor retention. And what I thought was so interesting in the report is our donor retention was about 50%, which was a slight increase over the previous year. But for each metric, we also looked at our top performing customers because we wanted to see like, what are the people who are like being really strategic, really applying great methodology seeing? And our top customers were seeing a donor retention of 67%. Which is 70% higher than the average, which is amazing. Like that's something to go after. If you have a goal and you're like, oh, my retention's only 50% or whatever, like you could try to get up to that top quartile. And for every metric we have that, which I think is really helpful. I know when I was a fundraiser, I would be like, what should my goal be? Okay, I'm at the benchmark, but like how much higher can I go? Or how much, you know, where should I go? So that at least kind of gives you like something to aim for.
That's amazing. So if you were to guess top, I mean, you said top 25%. Yeah. That's fantastic. What would you guess top 10% is? I'm putting you on the spot.
Honestly, I don't know, but I'll tell you that I was in a round table recently where we're like asking a bunch of nonprofits, like, so we're hearing that donor retention is really difficult. This one guy was like, oh, our donor retention is 80%. And I was like, oh, that's great. We're not hearing that. But I feel like when he said that, I was like, that probably is like the people who are like at the upper echelon of like, we really are retaining our donors.
But that's just one of those things where you can understand what's possible. I think like, it's not going to be 100%, right?
For sure.
Not going to achieve 100.
Yeah.
If we achieve 80. If we achieve 85, we're in a category of nonprofit where scalability goes through the roof. So I don't have to tell Carly this. Like, Carly knows what I'm about to say, obviously. But like, if you were a venture-backed Silicon Valley tech company and your churn rate was like greater than 5 to 15%, investors would be very concerned. They would say, like, we cannot invest enough into this machine because it's going to lose too much money. You're going to churn too many donors. We will lose too many donors. It would be customers in that scenario.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so talking about this nonprofit, it's like ours is at 80%. That's high according to, like, you know, scale up multi-billion dollar company standards. But from a nonprofit perspective, that's an unbelievable accomplishment. Like, that is, but what does that tell you about the organization? Like, you are the, you know, captain of the responsive nonprofit fundraising team for an organization that has achieved an 85% retention rate. What does that tell you about how they treat their funders?
Yeah, I mean, they're super engaged and they're being very relational and making every donor feel like, I mean, there's a cliche phrase like treat every donor like a major donor, but make every donor feel like that, which is really difficult. And I think many nonprofits can feel overwhelmed by like, how am I going to treat 5,000 donors like that? And like, not to plug Virtuous, but like technology helps you scale that. But it's just like you and me, like your relationship with a nonprofit, like it's personal. You feel, I like to use Pepperdine where I went for my MBA program as an example. Like if they would send me a letter about like the psychology program, I would be like, you don't know me. Like if they would send me a letter about the business program and like something I did there, like it feels personal. Like I want to give. And like, that's the way that you engage and retain your donors is pay attention to them and respond to them like it is a real relationship.
Right. And then, like you said, it's a technology, but it's a data problem, right? So if I'm a development officer at Pepperdine's MBA program and I see Carly Burnham, I see her succeeding, I'm like, oh, wow, I'm tracking her on LinkedIn. She's taking names, rushing over here. Oh, yeah, she was one of our students. I send her a letter. I write her an email, whatever. Just honored to have you as a part of the alumni network. You are the reason why. I mean, literally, we can just go over the top. And this is all possible thanks to technology, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Doing that 1,000 times a day.
Yeah.
Right? It's possible.
Yeah.
That leads to world-renowned, industry-leading retention rates, like that kind of.
Yeah. And I would say some other metrics that kind of build into retention, which we looked at, are like first to second gift conversion. And then another one that we looked at that's new this year is days between first and second gift. So second gift is kind of like, it's the epitome of a donor saying like, yes, I'm going to continue in a relationship with you. So this year we saw that the days between first and second gift, which honestly, I'm not really impressed with this number. It's 121 days, which is 4 months. Our top customers saw 107 days. So like more like 3 months and a week, but like just shortening that slightly, getting someone to that second gift faster is really just increasing that engagement with them. But like, that's a great metric. If you're like, how do I impact donor retention? Because it feels like a massive metric to impact. Just impact first to second gift conversion and days to first to second gift. And like, this isn't a hot tip, but like hot tip, new donor welcome series. If you don't have one, get one. And if you have one, audit it because you probably haven't looked at it in a long time and it probably could be better.
You're preaching now, Carly. That's good. That's really, really good. Okay. So we're both nerds. So I think we can come out and say that. Let's talk about what's exciting when you go first to second gift and let's just say less than 90 days, right? Or sooner, right? Let's get a little greedy. Yeah. Let's go sooner than that.
Yeah.
Let's just be a little superfluous. $100 acquisition cost, right? Cost $100 to acquire a donor. It's more than that, but let's go with $100. If the average gift size was $150, is that what I saw?
The average gift for just general average?
Yes. Was it 50 or was it 150? I'm blanking.
127.
127. Okay. And so if we achieve $127 on our first gift and our acquisition costs were $100, already we're positive 27. Now we are not netting that money because we have program costs, we have people costs. We're not getting into gross profit numbers.
Yeah.
So two nerds over here getting into the balance sheet and getting to the P&L and all that stuff. That's not what we're doing. But if we can bring that second gift closer to the future, if we can hasten that timeline, this is one of my favorite things to see. Let's say the second gift is also $127, whatever it was. We are now playing a very different game with regard to being able to fund our future, right? We are being able to confidently say, wow, we invested $10,000 in this growth. In a quarter's time, I'd love to see it a lot sooner than that, but in a quarter's time, we made all that money back plus 27%. And then in the next quarter, those same donors doubled the amount of money that they gave. Now we can, like, we can spend so much more on acquiring new funders because we have built a machine that can sustain that giving, right? And that's so exciting, right? That is so exciting to break down. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, first to second gift is one thing, but like as you're talking, all I'm thinking about is recurring giving. Like it's great to get like that second gift and that third gift, but if you can get that donor to give every single month, and I'm very passionate about recurring giving, by the way, so you'll have to like take me off my soapbox here, but at the organization I was at, we had 1,000 recurring givers, and it was like
that's awesome. 15,000 individual recurring givers.
Yes.
So
and
exciting.
It was like 25% of our revenue. But what was so interesting to me was they gave recurring, but then they also gave additional gifts on top of that, like $1 million of additional gifts. And sometimes I hear people say, well, if they're recurring, like you just kind of have to let them be and like don't bother them so they forget about their gift or cancel it or whatever. But no, these are your most engaged donors. Like they want to give, and then they also want to give to that like extra project that you're doing in Africa or wherever. Like they want that. We even had like some of our major, major donors were recurring givers at like $100 a month, but they just wanted to feel like I'm giving every month, and then I'll still give like a 25K gift, you know, when it's time for me to do so. But our top customers saw 33% of their revenue coming from recurring giving, which is amazing. I just quoted 25% for myself. The average was just under 13%. So it's still growing. Like it's been growing over 5 years pretty consistently since 2020. But that is really like that would impact your donor retention if you can get someone to give recurring and your revenue. Because now, say they give, you know, $127 three times a year. What if they're giving $100 12 times a year? Like you just like 4x the amount that they're giving. And that can have a huge impact on your revenue and your retention.
It's so important. And so you're using a great example, a very exciting and encouraging example of a large nonprofit, right? You work at a sizable organization. Obviously, you were part of that growth. Let's just go on the complete opposite side, like really, really small. I was having a conversation yesterday, this amazing woman who is just working her tail off and doing things I've never seen a one-person shop ever do before. I'm so impressed with this person. Next level. She works full time, has a nonprofit. She does from like 5 p.m. to 1 p.m. every night. And they raise a nominal amount. I think they do. I'm not saying nominal isn't like insignificant, but like $350,000 a year. Not teeny, teeny tiny, but one person doing this after hours. It was also 25% recurring donors from around the world. But she did one really, really interesting, super smart, sneaky thing. She baked in the corporate matching widget into her fundraising page. She gets an extra 30% of total revenue just comes from that one button on her checkout page. Think about that. An organization that's doing $400,000 a year, 25% from recurring donor, an additional 30% coming from the same donors just from their businesses. And it's on a recurring basis. I mean, that's just that's a great. Magical thing to get working. Again, she's leveraging Google Ads and some great technology, and she's able to make that up. That was impossible 5 years ago. Like that was just not possible to do that. Yeah. It's just so exciting to see what that can look like and how she's able to budget because she knows what's coming in with a high degree of certainty, not with a 100% degree, but a high degree of certainty.
Yeah, that is what's so magical about recurring giving is it is this sustainable revenue that you can depend on. Now, it's not 100% of your organization, but you at least know like, hey, 25% or whatever percent is going to come through it. I also just want to say when we talk about recurring giving, like we're talking about more than just a checkbox on your donation form that says, I will become a monthly donor. Like you really want to have like a program that makes someone feel like an insider and like they want to be behind the scenes and like they're going to get stewardship follow-ups of what's happening and like what's happening with their dollars and the impact that it's having. Like that's how you get someone to engage in a recurring giving program. It's not just like, oh, I have a checkbox on my donation forms, but it's just not working. Like, no, you're like trying to almost build like a community of people that are like behind your organization.
But just talk about how much work that is, right? Like, this isn't something that happens on accident. Like, yeah. I think that's what you're really emphasizing here.
Yeah, definitely not. I mean, we went kind of like monthly giving first at the organization I was at, and we had to change every channel, you know, our donation form, television show, mail appeals, et cetera. We just made it like a primary focus. The thing that can be difficult about that is often a recurring gift has a lower upfront amount. So like if your average gift is $27, most likely your recurring donors aren't going to give $127. So it looks like upfront, like, oh, maybe we're not getting as much money. Well, long term, you definitely are. So that's what was the hardest part, was being like, let's commit to it and let's see it over time. But yeah, I mean, we had a branded program. We had benefits for them. We had different follow-ups for them. We did use automation though. So like they got automated postcards and automated letters and automated emails to follow up. It wasn't like we were manually doing all that work, but it was a community. Charity Waters example of the well, I think it's called.
Yeah. Something like
that. Yeah. It's amazing. It's the same thing. It's like, you know, all about like being part of a community. So yeah, it takes a lot of work to do that, but definitely worth it. And it really makes your donors feel like they're part of the organization and not just like, you know, a credit card giver.
Exactly. Exactly. Because what will they do when times get tough? What's the point? I get that same quarterly email and I don't really care.
Yes.
Like that's what happens. And like, I don't know. I think there's so much to unpack with the amount of work, but thinking about it like an investment, you know, if we're going to go back to our business school type conversations, like what's the return on invested capital here? Like how much are we going to have to invest in order to get this kind of return? Because everyone wants monthly recurring donors. I mean, if we just had 1,000 people giving at $100 a month, we'd have these great outcomes. Yeah, that'd be awesome. But the work it takes to do that is substantial, right? And so I think it's important to say how much work it is, while at the same time, from a technological standpoint, it's never been easier. And so you have to balance those two realities out.
For sure. By the way, it's the spring, just so that Charity Water doesn't come after me. The spring.
The spring. I like the well. There might be another one called the well, but the spring sounds great too.
Yeah, since we're on this kind of topic of like acquisition and retention, I'll just sit on two of my favorite metrics that we talked about. One was new donor acquisition. I wish we could measure like cost to acquire per donor. We can't because we don't have everyone's cost information. So the way that we looked at it instead was just what percentage of an active donor file was new donors. And we saw about 29%, which was steadily dropping over the last 5 years. It's dropped about 5 percentage points since 2020 and 2 percentage points since last year. That wasn't really surprising to me. I'm curious your thoughts because you work with so many nonprofits. But to me, I mean, I've heard in the industry that there's less donors giving, they're giving a bigger amount. And I also think that nonprofits are investing less, either that their budgets are smaller or like during COVID, we were all a little scared about what was going to happen. So we were cutting back on acquisition. So I'm not surprised by that, but I'm kind of curious what you thought about that.
Yeah, I think the acquisition cost number is what would be fascinating because it's obviously a dual-sided metric. Unfortunately, we don't have that with CRM data. It's a QuickBooks conversation. That's a financial conversation, but it's not without the CRM conversation. Like you have to have both. And so very few. I mean, when you have someone that has access to both of that information, like I would love to do a study on donor acquisition costs. If we look at customer acquisition costs for a lot of like professional services, $3,500 from acquisition cost is not irregular. But if you apply that same math towards nonprofits and the average donor gift size is $150, it's going to take a long time to get up to $3,500, which is not the donor acquisition cost. So I want to be clear. I'm just using that as a proxy. I think the challenge is that we've never had a wealthier country. Like when you look at how much money is in the United States right now, and I'll just go ahead and say it. When you look at how much wealth has been accumulated since 08-09, just over that time scale, it's astounding. Like it's just absolutely, you compare the United States economy to other OECD economies, and it's just like, what is going on over here? Right? Like we're very fortunate to have just a wild economy. And I know that doesn't always make the news. Like good news really doesn't make the news. And it's not surprising to me seeing the actual gift size go up the way it is. But money usually gets controlled by fewer and fewer and fewer people. Like that's where the Pareto principle comes from. That's where all these kinds of things come from. And so when you see like fewer dollars invested in acquisition, I usually get concerned. It's like, why are we investing less when there's never been more of an upside?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's usually due to fear, usually due to uncertainty, usually due to we don't have a good handle on our channels, our acquisition channels.
Yeah.
And so just thinking about, we can talk about some of these tactics on like how you can actually get your acquisition costs almost down to zero, you know, just by using some creative funding strategies and understanding, like we'll talk about LTV in just a few minutes and lifetime value in a few minutes, just understanding the importance of that ratio of acquisition versus lifetime value. I think a lot of mid-tier donors, I think a lot of people still, I know I'm talking about a lot of people getting really rich. Inflation has been remarkable, right? It's really, really high over a long time. So I think a lot of lower giving levels, mid-tier giving levels have been hurt, but I don't think people have a true appreciation for how high the high-end giving is. And I know it skews data, so it's hard to pull that into all like all types of reports here. But there, like you look at from 2019 to 2023, I believe, maybe 2024, foundation revenues grew by 50%. Like assets under management at a foundation on average, so like not even the high performers, on average grew 50%. And like that's astounding levels of growth, right? I mean, it's just truly amazing. Like I'll tell you a quick story. Someone that we work with that we love, they're an amazing foundation. 20 years ago, they had $8 million in assets under management. 20 years ago. They're approaching $2 billion in assets under management.
Wow.
20 years later by investing extraordinary. So think of them more like, you know, an endowment. You know, they've managed their assets like an endowment. And like, that is such a terrifyingly huge level of growth. But understanding that a lot of foundations are in that position, not that level of position. Like that's a 1%, top 1% performer. Just knowing that there's a lot of money out there in the form of foundations, still with federal grantors. And my heart is completely broken for all of our USAID funded clients. Like that has been a nightmare. But individual donors, like there's never been more money in families in the United States. So I can talk about this all day long, but it's an interesting landscape that we're in.
Yeah. I would say if you're an organization that hasn't maybe looked at your donor acquisition metrics, the first thing I would do, which you mentioned, is look at your cost per donor by channel. So that just means look at the number of donors you're bringing in from a channel and look at the total cost and then divide those. Just for example, like direct mail, you might have a cost of $90 for your donors, but on digital, you might have a cost of $200. So if you look at those metrics alone, you'd be like, I want those direct mail donors. And that's where LTV comes in, which is my favorite metric, by the way. Scott Holthaus, who I know you know, my podcast co-host, thinks that I should have a shirt that says I heart LTV because I love it so much.
Well, good. It's a good thing to love for your nonprofit.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you think about those two examples, that $90 direct mail donor, maybe they're going to give $180 over 5 years, but that $200 digital donor might give $600 over 5 years. And so those are very different ROIs. And that's why just looking at the metrics in a silo is really not the best strategic way to make a decision. What we saw for donor lifetime value was an increase over the previous year. It's at about $780 for donor lifetime value. And it varies like by the size of organizations. But you really want to be looking at cost per donor and LTV together. And like, where is that break even period? Are you even breaking even? Like sometimes I think you start looking at these metrics and you're like, oh, we actually lose money every time we get a new donor on whatever channel. But if you want to be like a, you know, a great steward of your donor's dollars, like that's really the way to start, is cost per donor and then LTV.
Yeah. I think you and I could start a podcast called LTV to acquisition.
I think so. Yeah.
Literally just like the two ratios. Like, look at those two things. Let's just camp out there for a minute, because this is probably my favorite conversation to have for organizations that want to scale. Yeah. So we care deeply about the impact that nonprofits create. Like, we're social impact solutions. We've got doctors in public health on our team to measure impact.
Mm-hmm.
But like, creating impact is extraordinarily costly, right? Mm-hmm. Growing is extraordinarily costly. So we have to talk about the economics of growth. Like, how do we really make the math work? And so Carly just laid out an amazing metric to understand on LTV. And this is excluding $10,000 gifts and above, correct? Like, if we looked at that, that would be a very different number. But just looking at everything under $10,000, $780 ballpark, 770, 780.
Yes. Yep.
Knowing that number per channel. And she said, like, you lose money on some of these channels. Like, the best private equity companies in the world, before we started everything that we did, we used to consult with private equity companies, and like, they know this stuff better than anybody else. What do they see when they have an unprofitable channel? They cut it and they never think about it again. Like, they scoop up all these companies, they look at their most efficient channels, and they say, only keeping the efficient ones, saying goodbye to everything else, especially those that are losing money. So like, when you think about LTV, how do you get people to fall in love with the idea of LTV? Like, where do you see that conversation going, and how important it is to apply that from a nonprofit mindset to like actually growing it?
Yeah. Well, one, I think it says a lot about how engaged your donors are with you. You know, if they're only giving $100 over their entire lifetime, like, they're not very engaged. And by the way, everyone's LTV is going to be very different depending on the makeup of your file health. So I wouldn't look at 780 and be like, oh my gosh, minus 300 or minus 2000 or whatever. Like, everyone's totally different. What matters is the connection between LTV and donor acquisition. But I think it shows a lot about the engagement of your donor. And this is also a metric that you can impact without even thinking about donor volume. So if you want to just impact your current donors, like, increase their LTV, which means increase their online average gift, increase their year-over-year giving, add recurring giving. Like, there's so much you can do to impact that, which will then just impact your fundraising program completely. I think oftentimes we're like, we just need new donors. We just need new donors. So there's a lot of donors that you can impact without bringing on more donors. And it really comes down to this idea of like quantity over quality. I feel like sometimes nonprofits are like, oh, we have 200,000 active donors. And I'm like, that's great. How much are they giving, like, over time? You know, I'd rather have 50,000 active donors that have a really high LTV than 200,000 that have a really low engagement and low LTV. So I think thinking about it in that way is probably the best way to think about, like, oh, I can impact this number. This says a lot about my current donors. Like, how do I get a pulse on what they care about and how much they're giving now?
100%. And just think about, you know, the metric that you brought up before, donor retention. Like, if you get one more gift, does that increase LTV by 30%, 20%, yeah. 100%?
Yeah.
Right. And if you do that at scale, and like, let's just define what I mean by that, by over 100 people, right? Just 100 people. And if you have thousands and thousands of donors, doing that with a larger donor pool. And when you have, like, again, plug for Virtuous, when you have the ability to see this in a dashboard, be able to see, and Virtuous auto calculates LTV. It's a beautiful thing. I mean, how much time that takes people just auto-calculating LTV. But just being able to see, if we increase donor retention, if we increase LTV, what does that allow us to do from a growth standpoint, from funding our programs, from hiring more people, from having better net margin? Like, we talked about earlier, like, oh, just because it says not profit doesn't mean we should have, you know, surplus. Desperately need surplus. So I have a dear friend. He's become a dear friend. We had the chance to work together a number of years ago. He was one of the founders of BridgeBank, like one of the founding team members, one of the best consulting companies in the world for social enterprises. And he used to tell folks at BridgeBank, hey, listen, no margin, no mission. If you want to increase your, like, your ability to create impact, juice LTV, juice recurring donor, because that is going to be your growth engine.
Yeah.
Acquisition versus LTV. Do you feel like we need to take this further? Because we can beat this dead horse more if we need to.
Where would you like to go? I mean, I could talk about LTV all day long. So
let's just go a little bit further. Let's talk about, like, if you're going to compare direct mail with like a Google Ads channel, like free Google Ads channel. I love free Google Ads.
Yeah.
I actually like it a lot for recruiting beneficiaries. A lot of people only think about it for donors. I love, because you have to look on the other side of the engine. Like, what is our beneficiary acquisition cost versus beneficiary lifetime? Like, all of that good stuff. But do you have just ballpark estimates what the ratios should be? Like, 3-to-1 is sort of the baseline. So, you know, a 3-to-1, like, you make $3 for every $1 you invest in this channel. I'm saying that for the audience, not for Carly. 5-to-1, 10-to-1. Do you have any hunches on that?
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you from my own experience, and I know because we were on another podcast together that we have different experiences on this, which is great, because then we'll be able to provide different perspectives. Our goal, and I know that you have a stronger, more efficient goal than this, was always to break even at 2 years.
2 years.
And really, we weren't looking for 3-to-1 or 4-to-1 or 5-to-1. We wanted to spend as much as we could to break even at 2 years. So the goal was like, I'll use direct mail, even though it's kind of a bad example. Digital is probably better. But like, we would, if we were not breaking even, and 2 years can be, if you want it to be 1 year, set it at 1 year and say, we want to break even at 1 year. And we spend as much as we can to break even at 1 year. And when you start passing that threshold, then you dial the spend back down. Same thing with digital. Like, okay, we want to break even at 1 year. We spend as much as we can, dial it back down. Like, we just were trying to get to that threshold on every channel or adjusting it back. So it was really about the break-even point. And then, of course, building the LTV and all of that. But when we were thinking about spending, it was more like, where is our pay? What are we comfortable with from a payback perspective? And some organizations that maybe do have a surplus are like, okay, I'm okay with 2 years because I have the window to do that, where others are like, no, I need that income like right now. And then that's how we did it. We weren't looking so much as like 1.2 to 1.3 to 1.now. Within 5 years, like if we were looking at LTV versus like a 5-year LTV versus donor cost, which we called LTROI. I mean, we were looking at more like a 3-to-1, 4-to-1, 5-to-1 at that point. We just wanted to break even at the point that we set.
So I think that's so important to note because it really does boil down to lifetime value. Like, I think people just need to understand the magic happens with LTV. The time to enjoying that magic has to do with acquisition costs.
Yep.
Right? So like, if I want to enjoy that surplus sooner, I need to get that payback sooner. Mm-hmm. And so when we're just thinking like, again, if you're operating at a margin, if you're saying, okay, we're going to, I mean, ultimately what you're saying. So if you're at a 5-to-1, we're going to make 5 times the amount of money in a 5-year timeline. But that, if that is predicated by years of that kind of investment, it pays off, right? Because you're enjoying the 5-to-1 R2, like LTV from the previous year. In the previous year. And ultimately, like, you're just trying to create a snowball, right? We're just trying to create that massive, massive snowball. And your snowball is dictated by lifetime value to acquisition costs, like LTV to CAC, as we would say in the nonprofit, or in the for-profit space, but DAC, donor acquisition costs for that. But just thinking, that's what slows or speeds up growth. It's that metric. And that's not impact. That is literally fundraising efficiency. So it depends on the channel, but like so much more of it, I really would love to do a deal with QuickBooks and be like, we're going to do an acquisition cost, you know, analysis.
Yeah.
Because again, like these are fairly steady in the for-profit space, right? In the business space, like it's not, you're not like orders of magnitude difference. Like, oh, it's $1 over here and it's, you know, over here. It's not that much. I like seeing faster acquisition, but that's so much easier with high net worth donors.
Mm-hmm.
That's so much harder with mid-tier and low-tier giving. So we were talking about Charity Water earlier. I think it's a great example of this. They championed the idea, or they were running along the trend, I think this was very smart, of people that were upset with nonprofits, distrust in the nonprofits. So their whole value prop was, we are going to be the 100% of your money is going straight to the mission. And it was this novel idea. Oh my gosh, I didn't think that was possible. And all these other nonprofits just got slaughtered because they're like, oh, we're at, you know, 20% margin or whatever the, not margin, but ratio on that end. The OPEX expenses, you know, going into that. What most people don't know about Charity Water, though, is that they built a, like just this huge foundation of high net worth funders, mostly through family foundations and private foundations, to be the enabling side. So they paid for all the operational expenses. And so we look at Charity Water, and I don't know if I'm saying this terribly clearly, like we look at them as the example of, wow, they have $150 million in revenue, and all I see is low-tier giving.
Mm-hmm.
I just see phenomenal marketing, like best-in-class branding, best-in-class marketing, all of that good stuff. But the truth behind it is they have 160 family foundations that give unbelievable gobs of money to enable that. And so I think that the challenge with LTV to acquisition costs is more real with mid-tier donors. It's so, so much more doable when that first check is $10,000 or that first check is larger than that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, actually one of the metrics, that's pretty much the last metric left, but that we haven't talked about that has to do with this is portfolio balance, which is another one that I'm super passionate about because I don't often see it on benchmark reports. And I also think that it's a metric that, because sometimes when you look at all these and like you go to your major donor team, they're like, I don't really care about LTV. Like I'm going to go ask a donor for $10,000. But portfolio balance really looks at like the balance between general donors, mid-level donors, and major donors. And however your file health is, it's going to be totally different. And then all of your strategies are going to change. Just like you're talking about, if you have a ton of major donors, your acquisition is going to look very different than someone who has a lot of general donors. The importance of this metric, though, is like if you have a healthy fundraising machine, like you want a more balanced portfolio. Like you don't really want 90% major donors because one of them drops out, like you just lost 20% of your revenue, depending on how much they're giving. So what we saw over this past year was an increase in mid-level and a slight increase in major. I am the biggest fan of mid-level donors. I feel like they are like the overlooked donor.
Yes.
We like really pay attention to general. We send them all the appeals. We really pay attention to major. We have one-on-one relationships with them. And then there's like thousands of mid-level donors. And we're like, what do we do with them?
Right.
We can't hire like 10 major gift officers. And we shouldn't just send them everything. So like, where do they land?
Right.
Which again, another plug for technology, like it's a great space to scale personal reach out to mid-level donors. So it was really exciting for both Gabe and I to see that mid-level increase slightly. One, because it balances out the portfolio better. So you should be checking that, like for those listening, like look at your balance. How many are general, mid, major? Also, we could have a whole podcast on what is a major donor, what
right.
level of giving it is.
Right.
We looked at 10K plus for major and 1,000 and under for general, and then mid in the middle there. But I just think looking at that, that changes your fundraising strategies, changes your thoughts about new donor acquisition and LTV. But also you should really have a plan for each of those levels. They're not just a handful of donors. A general, a mid-level, and major is totally different. And you should have an upgrade plan for each, like general to mid, mid to major. Like that's really the goal, is to move them. It's not like the goal is to get them to a major donor. The goal is to get them as engaged as they can be. But like, what does it look like for them to get there? And they should have some specialized, personalized plan to get there.
And it's great advice. It's really, really good advice. The way we say it slightly differently in the, with regard to who are the ideal donors and build a strategy to attract, convert, and retain ideals.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning we love diversification by duplicating ideal donors so that you avoid yeah. exactly what you said.
Yeah.
Right. You avoid, oh my gosh, we just lost a donor. That was, I mean, lucky for some people, it's lucky if it's only 20%. Right?
Yeah.
For some organizations, it's 80% of our revenue.
Yeah.
Want
yeah.
funding.
Yeah.
Right. And so that situation is challenging because like, okay, well, we should have just gotten a lot more of these one type of funders. If I got 10 of them, I lose them. It's only 10% loss.
Mm-hmm.
100, it's a 1% loss. And what that's called is a damn good diversified nonprofit because they have 100 of those like massive, massive donors that works this way. Other than that's just because it's their ideal donor. Mm-hmm. Using your example from earlier, did you say 15,000 recurring donors?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's astounding.
Yeah.
It's absolutely astounding. And so I would just call that an ideal donor. It's this type of donor.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, it's a very different strategy
yeah.
to go after and keep those folks.
Yeah.
And so we're very much aligned in the methodology. I think we use slightly different terms, but it's just, who is the ideal? And then how do I go get them and keep them? And like, we can go straight back to LTV. Like you can get a lot of them, but if we're going to have a churn rate of north of 50%, it almost doesn't even matter. It's like, cool. So I keep one out of every two donors I convert.
Yeah.
It's brutal, right?
Yeah.
It's really, really hard yeah. to grow anything when the bucket has that big of a hole in the bottom and everyone's just leaking out.
Yeah. I like you said the word diversified, and I just want to stay there for a second. I think it was really helpful when someone explained this to me that like when we're talking about acquisition channels, like you should be thinking about diversifying your acquisition channels. Like direct mail is kind of like your bonds. Digital is like your stocks. It's always like going up and down. You don't know how the algorithm's changing, you know, whatever your other channels are. And you want to be in all of them. It doesn't mean like because digital is doing the best, you should pour all your money there. You should be in each, again, towards your payback period. But same with $1,000 mid-level and major donors, like you want to diversify so you're not spending all of it in one area. And then, for example, like major donors are impacted more by maybe economic conditions. If something terrible happens and now you lost all your major donors and you have no general or mid-level donors, like now you don't know what to do. So you want to diversify there too, so that economic impacts, you know, different circumstances are impacting only a portion of your donors, and you can rely on the others to create a sustainable revenue model.
Yeah, I love what you're saying. I'm totally with you. The only pushback I would get is just like, at what stage can a nonprofit do that?
Yeah.
And so I would just say, okay, cool. So for the lady I spoke with yesterday, $300,000 a year, cannot afford a grant strategy, cannot afford a mid-tier donor strategy, cannot afford 90% of the strategies that are out there. One day, like, the ultimate goal is exactly what Carly's saying. You want to be everywhere,
mm-hmm.
right? I just see so many small organizations, and by small, I mean like less than 5 million in revenue, trying to do everything, and they can't do any of it well. I'll just speak for myself as an entrepreneur. I've tried to do everything, and guess what? We struggled because of that. Then we found our wheelhouse. I'm like, okay, this is our wheelhouse, and now we've maximized that wheelhouse, and then we're going to bolt on a new wheelhouse. We're going to go hire somebody that understands X, and he or she is going to like execute that until it becomes a new wheelhouse, but we're going to keep this one going.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to add this one, and then we'll add the other. So the only pushback I would have is just like, at what stage could they do all of those things?
Yeah. I'm not going to give this information because I want you to download the benchmark report, but because we looked at every metric by org size, you can actually see this pie chart for under a million to five, 5 to 10, and 10 plus. So I think that really answers your question. I will give you like a teaser. For the under a million, like the major donors is less than 25% mm-hmm. of the pie chart.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you see that organizations grow, it gets bigger. And actually the largest organizations have the most balanced chart. It's kind of like more balanced. But you can see like some of the mid levels, like the 5 to 10 million, they're more like 50% as major donors.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that can help you see like, okay, I'm not looking for a 30-30-30 here, like because my organization is under a million, I'm looking for something very different because of fundraising strategies.
And just for everyone wondering where they're going to find that report, look in the link description. You'll have access to it. Get straight up, get great advice from Carly and the rest of the team on the benchmarking report. I think it's so good. I think my favorite thing about these conversations is it forces someone to think differently. I remember mm-hmm. just the first few months of my MBA program, I was like, wow, I have not seen the world the way that these people are talking. Like my perspective was off. What does this mean? Like it literally just opened my eyes to how the world works. You know, from a different perspective, not like a comprehensive perspective. And like just this conversation does not really exist in too many spaces in the nonprofit industry. You know, we talk about superfluous things. We talk about things that, you know, don't lead to meaningful, substantial growth.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that just the conversation around metrics that actually matter. And I'd love to just ask you, like, why did you choose these 7? Like you could have gone other directions. You obviously are super experienced, super smart. Why did you choose these 7?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I get to blame our CEO, Gabe, for choosing the 7. When I came in actually last year and I said to him, like, hey, we should make a benchmark report. He's like, oh, you know what? I wrote like a half-baked outline for a benchmark report if you want to like take it up. So he really helped choose them. But we've talked about this a ton. And really, we feel like these 7 build on each other. Like you can't look at donor retention without looking at average gift, without looking at donor expansion. And so they're all like a piece of the puzzle, which honestly, I think is like one of the biggest downfalls I've seen in nonprofit is you look at data in a silo. Like if you don't have a very smart board, your chief development officer can cut the data in 100 ways and be like, look, we're doing great because of this thing here. But like, you want to look at these all together. And like, this report is supposed to help you see the areas where to improve. It's not supposed to be like, oh, you're terrible at this.
Mm-hmm.
But really, he just wanted to choose metrics that were different pieces of the fundraising puzzle that could really get to all the different areas that you should be paying attention to. And it really comes down to like a lot more of the metrics are about donor retention than acquisition, which I mean, I feel like we've kind of talked about to death here. So hopefully if the one takeaway is donor retention is important and we love LTV.
We love LTV.
So it's a lot about donor retention, how to engage with your current donors. There's some touch on donor acquisition, but really like a piece of a puzzle.
Right. I think it's just hard to have the access to that information when you don't know, you know, what the marketing development is.
Yeah.
I think that's a great answer. I think it's a really good understanding of why those metrics matter. And just, again, I'm shameless plug for you guys. Like there's a lot of fundraising software out there. There are a lot of CRMs. There are a lot that have crept up in the last 5 years, 7 mm-hmm. years. And that's a good thing. I love that. When you're serious about growth, you cannot do it without knowing what these numbers are. These are the numbers that lead to growth. And it's stuff that they don't teach you in undergrad. They don't teach you on, you know, typical marketing and development fund like webinars. Like they just don't teach you this stuff. Yeah. I don't know why, but like, yeah, these are the things that actually lead to meaningful, substantial growth. And there are organizations that scale to unbelievable numbers. And it's almost always because they knew this stuff. Like it's like, okay, cool. So we need to get our LTV higher before we can do X, Y, or Z. So let's fix LTV first. Because you can't solve all of these at the same time. Like you can't solve everything this week. And like these seven metrics, I would argue are some of the most, if not the most important ones to like lean into and be like, if we could only accomplish one thing this year, like revenue retention, donor retention, like the payback on that is so great. Like it's, mm-hmm, it's hard to really explain it other than just in like the dollars and cents. Like if you drop it by 5% or increase it by 5%, reduce churn by 5, like that will do more for your fundraising efficiency than just about anything else. Leads to greater LTV, leads to, I mean, it's just, there's so many things that you can unpack from that. And like all of these, almost all of these metrics, if there's one I'm missing, please forgive me, they come standard in Virtuous.
Yeah, we actually have a dashboard called the Responsive Dashboard. Like it's built in. So if anyone goes to that, I think it has nearly all of the metrics. Maybe it's missing one, but like you should be able to see it immediately. And then you can look at it as much as you want instead of like maybe relying on an agency or someone to give you that information.
Totally. Totally. And so like when you think about, okay, what are my alternatives? I could be playing around with Blackbaud and probably never have access to this information. I can go with Salesforce, which is a tremendous software that you will have to build completely from scratch.
Yeah.
It's not free, despite what people think. It's like not a free platform. You have to build it out. And the enterprise level softwares that are out there are not designed for nonprofits. Like it's just, it's a completely different use case. It's like that, again, if you want to think about growth, like how do we actually do this? Like what's a platform that's going to support it?
Mm-hmm.
That's why I love Virtuous. I think it's an excellent platform for organizations that are serious about growing and want to take things to the next level.
Yeah, I totally agree.
A little bit biased on that, but hey, I don't have as much of a dog in the fight as you do, but I think it's a really, really, really helpful just heuristic of how are we going to accomplish our goals? Like we have to reduce it down. If we were just going to pick one of these metrics, what are we going to do? Okay, cool. Now, what are the action steps that need to follow? Otherwise, it's just we're shooting in the dark. And that's why companies and nonprofits stay stuck. It's because we're not improving the thing that needs to be improved.
Yeah, totally agree.
It's awesome. So Carly, what do you want to leave people with? Like, what do you want folks to know about the industry, the metrics that matter most, but just what do you think's on the horizon? We'd just love to for you to pick your brain a little and just give people a little word of encouragement here.
Yeah, I think, you know, as you're listening to this, I think it can be overwhelming. Like I was just thinking about if I was early in my fundraising career listening to us talk, I would have been like, what are they talking about? But like, pick a metric that you're like, hey, I'm not measuring this. Let me start measuring it and let me just measure it month over month and implement some of the strategies that we have listed and just look at the change. One, it will be encouraging for you to see that you can like actually move a number by some of these things. And then from there, you can see like, okay, now I'm going to pick a bigger metric, something, you know, maybe a couple of them and do the same thing. So that's my encouragement when it comes to the benchmark report. When it comes to the industry, I think like I love data. I think data is so important. But like we get to work in a really unique industry where we are having an impact, like a massive impact every day on huge social issues. And I think right now it can feel like there's a lot of headwinds, whether those are fundraising numbers or, you know, other things happening in the world. But like our world like needs nonprofiters that are listening. Like we need you to keep showing up every day and keep doing all the difficult things that you're doing, because otherwise businesses would be out there solving these problems, and clearly they're not. Like we need nonprofits to solve these world problems. So I would just say like, don't lose heart because of the things going on. Like our work is still so important and matters so much. This data and information can help you make better fundraising decisions, but really the important part is like the impact of your mission and that you're having. And, you know, don't lose sight of that. Don't let your staff lose sight of that. Like that's really why we're doing what we're doing.
Completely. I just want to echo that 100%. And I think it's also just, it's what I love about your benchmark report, just getting different perspectives and, you know, just being able to talk to a lot of nonprofit leaders. Like there are a lot of organizations that are crushing right now, right? Like absolutely doubling revenue, tripling revenue, doing great. And then there are others that are really, really hurting. And it's like, what can we share from both sides? Because there are certain things that these orgs are doing tremendously well, some vice versa over here. And just that was such a gift. I mean, because it was just a lot of work putting this report together. Like, this is no joke. Like, for 500 some odd, you know, organizations that you were evaluating, tons and tons of work. So a huge service that you and the team did. I think it was predominantly you, which is even more impressive, being able to do all of that. But just knowing, like, I like letting people, like, there's a lot of opportunity out there. There's a lot more money out there than people think. The news is not a great indicator of sort of the funding reality. Again, with the caveat, the organizations that have had federal funding cut, it's a tremendous knife in the back. So please hear me say it with that utmost sincerity. But just knowing, like, there are strategies that support it. There are software, there's data that supports this. And like Carly said, like, you're solving problems that the government's not designed to solve, that businesses aren't designed to solve. Like, this is a uniquely social, you know, nonprofit service. So just really, it's amazing work to just echo what Carly's saying.
Agree.
Awesome. Well, Carly, thank you so much for your time today. We will definitely encourage folks to look out for virtuous.org to download the benchmark report. Is there any other ways that you want people to get a hold of you, get a hold of the team at Virtuous?
I mean, you can find me on LinkedIn, but you could actually get the benchmark report at virtuous.org/benchmark report if you want to get there faster.
Perfect. It's a great thing. It's a great thing. Well, thank you so much for your time today and for the great work that you're doing.
Awesome. Thanks for chatting about all things data and nerdy fundraising things.
Hey, man, we got to have fun somewhere. This is a great place to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much.